Welcome to Love Letters. Sex 101. Take two. Hi, I'm Dino.
And this is Nick, the Dr. Digital.
And welcome to Sex 101. Another week, another great episode. A sexual theology of redemption. Jesus and the woman at the well.
This one story, Jesus and the woman at the well, is so rich that we can plumb the depths of the sexual theology of redemption. We've covered similar ground here in other places, but there's more to be said, and that's the topic for this episode.
Mr. Mick, how can this ancient story shape how we think about sexuality, spirituality, and relationships in the 21st century?
As we open this deep dive into one of Scripture's most revolutionary encounters, I'm struck by how this ancient story provides exactly the framework our generation needs for healing from both religious sexual shame and secular sexual brokenness. The woman at the well offers us a third way beyond the virgin whore dichotomy that has plagued Western culture for nearly two millennia. What we discover in John chapter 4 is that Jesus' approach to sexuality and relationships was far more integrated and healing-oriented than what developed in later theological traditions. He doesn't shame the woman for her sexual history, but he also doesn't ignore it or pretend it doesn't matter. Instead, he creates space for honest acknowledgement within a relationship of divine acceptance, leading to transformation that encompasses her whole person, spiritual, sexual, intellectual, and social. For couples today, this provides a roadmap that's both psychologically sound and theologically grounded. Sexual healing doesn't require eliminating sexual desire or erasing sexual history. It requires integration, bringing all aspects of our identity into relationship with divine love and allowing that love to transform our capacity for authentic intimacy. The early church fathers, despite their cultural limitations, recognized something profound about this woman that later developments would obscure. Augustine saw in her the possibility of redeemed sexuality, not the transcendence of sexuality, but its integration into divine purpose. Chrysostom marveled at her evangelistic effectiveness despite, or perhaps because of her sexual brokenness. Jerome noted her intellectual sophistication alongside her relational struggles. What they glimpsed was a vision of human wholeness that our therapeutic culture desperately needs. We live in an era that has tried to solve sexual problems through either religious suppression or secular liberation, but both approaches often leave people feeling fragmented and unsatisfied. The woman at the well suggests a different path, integration through divine love. The ancient wisdom speaks directly to contemporary struggles. Whether couples are dealing with pornography addiction, past sexual abuse, infidelity, purity culture shame, or simply the challenge of creating healthy sexuality in a hyper-sexualized culture, the pattern remains the same. Thirst, truth-telling, transformation, and ultimately ministry to others. The living water that Jesus offers represents internal spiritual resources that can satisfy our deepest longings without eliminating our capacity for human intimacy. In fact, when our primary needs for security, meaning, and validation are met through a divine relationship, we become free to offer authentic love and also attachment and closeness in our human relationships. But perhaps most importantly, this story demonstrates that sexual brokenness doesn't disqualify us from spiritual significance or relational happiness. When processed through divine grace, our struggles often become our greatest sources of compassion, wisdom, and effectiveness in helping others. The woman's sexual history becomes part of her testimony rather than her shame. As we think about the ripple effects of sexual healing, we see how personal transformation can impact entire communities. The woman's encounter with Jesus led to a citywide spiritual revival. When modern couples experience authentic healing in their sexual and relational lives, they often become resources for friends, family, and church communities struggling with similar issues. This creates hope for broader cultural transformation. Imagine churches that taught sexual integration rather than sexual suppression, that prepared young people for healthy relationships rather than just warning them about sexual dangers, that celebrated sexuality within committed relationships as part of divine design rather than treating it as a necessary evil. Imagine dating relationships built on the foundation of divine love rather than human neediness, where partners could be honest about their sexual histories without fear of rejection or ongoing judgment, where spiritual growth and sexual development could happen simultaneously rather than opposition to each other. The Woman at the Well shows us that this isn't just idealistic dreaming. It's the kind of transformation that divine love makes possible. Her story continues to offer living water to anyone willing to engage in honest conversation with the one who knows us completely and loves us anyway. In a culture that often reduces women to sexual categories and men to sexual performance, this ancient encounter offers a vision of relationships based on integrated wholeness, mutual recognition of divine image, and shared commitment to both personal healing and community transformation. For our listeners who are dating, engaged, or married, the invitation is clear. Be your full selves and bring those to your sexual histories, current struggles, and deepest longings into a relationship, into divine love. Allow that love to transform your shame into testimony, your brokenness into compassion, and your relationships into sources of healing for yourselves and others. The woman left the water jar at the well because she had found the source of living water. May we discover the same source, and may our relationships become channels through which others can experience the healing, integration, and wholeness that divine love makes possible. Remember, understanding our sexual and spiritual integration isn't about perfection, it's about wholeness. The woman's encounter with divine love transformed her understanding of herself and her capacity for worship. But the story doesn't end with personal healing. It explodes into community-wide revival. And that progression from private encounter to public testimony provides a roadmap for how our own sexual healing can impact not just our relationships, but entire communities. In conclusion, it's about recognizing that the God who created us as embodied souls loves every aspect of who we are and wants to heal and integrate all of our experiences into purposes that extend far beyond ourselves.
Mr. Meg, how does a personal sexual healing become community transformation, and what does that mean for our relationships today?
Let's start with the disciples' return and their shocked reaction to finding Jesus talking with this woman. Their response reveals important ideas about religious communities and sexual healing. The disciples' shock reveals how even those closest to Jesus can carry cultural blind spots that limit their understanding of divine grace. John writes, "Just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman. But no one asks, 'What do you want? What's really going on here?' This moment of stunned silence speaks volumes about their assumptions and Jesus' countercultural approach to relationships." John Chrysostom preaches extensively on this moment, noting that the disciples have been with Jesus long enough to know he regularly breaks social conventions, yet they're still shocked with his interaction with this Samaritan woman. Their surprise reveals the depth of cultural conditioning around gender, sexuality, and religious propriety. Even exposure to revolutionary grace doesn't automatically transform our inherited prejudices. Augustine analyzes the disciples' restraint in not questioning Jesus directly. He suggests a form of spiritual maturity. That is, recognizing a teacher's behavior challenges their assumptions, but trusting his judgment rather than immediately demanding explanations. However, their silent disapproval still creates an atmosphere of judgment that creates sharply with Jesus' countercultural acceptance. The disciples' reaction illuminates how religious communities can inadvertently perpetuate the very shame that divine love seeks to heal. Their shock at finding Jesus with a sexually compromised Samaritan woman reflects assumptions about moral contamination, spiritual propriety, and also appropriate religious boundaries that Jesus consistently challenges. For modern dating couples, the disciples' response represents family, church, and community reactions that might arise when people choose grace over judgment in relationships. When couples intentionally create space for sexual healing and honest conversation about difficult histories, they may encounter disapproval from religious communities that prefer simple categories of right and wrong relationships. Jerome notes the irony that while the disciples remain silent and judgmental, the woman goes out to the community. Those who understand Jesus' mission are most clearly hindered by their own religious convictions, while the person they would consider less qualified to demonstrate spiritual insight and authority. This reversal challenges assumptions about spiritual authority and ministry qualifications. The disciples are focused on the mundane, the physical, the things of the day, whereas the woman realizes the eternal questions about who and what Jesus is and what his mission is. Ambrose of Milan observes that the disciples represent institutional religion's tendency towards exclusivity and keeping outsiders out. With their special relationship with Jesus, they should have known they had insider knowledge, and they will also be promised future authority. So who is this woman? She too is a part, whereas though she was excluded and marginalized, she's inside as well. Jesus' response to their unspoken questions, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and finish his work," suggests that Jesus came precisely to those people who appeared to be outside the community. This should reframe the disciples and ourselves' understanding of spiritual work from the kind of boundaries that we may artificially create. For contemporary couples, this tension plays out regularly. Churches may subtly approve or disapprove of relationships with people of different backgrounds, different spiritual maturity, and different ethnic or religious denominational differences. Jesus represents the pressure that appearances don't matter as much as the reality of grace. Origen develops an allegorical interpretation where the disciples represent Jewish Christianity's initial resistance to Gentile inclusion. Their shock at finding Jesus and the Samaritan woman prefigures their later surprise at divine grace extending to everyone and to the entire world. This suggests that religious communities consistently underestimate the inclusiveness of divine love. The disciples' silence also reveals how shame functions in religious communities. Their disapproval doesn't need to be verbally expressed to be powerfully understood and understood by others to their harm. Many couples struggling with sexual issues experience similar dynamics in church contexts. What modern psychology would recognize to us is that relationships or experiences don't fit all the dominant cultural norms. Religious communities that preach grace need to practice it as well and be careful of the practices of messages that they are transmitting. The disciples' priorities also represent their own immaturity. They're focused on the mundane, the daily, the worth of food, and things of that nature, while Jesus just explained his messianic identity to someone they considered unworthy, and they're concerned about the daily activities. This contrast illustrates how religious training can sometimes hinder our understanding of the divine grace. The disciples should have known better. They know the scriptures, they understand Jewish law, and they've actually been specifically chosen. Yet they miss the entire significance of Jesus talking to the disenfranchised. The woman, despite her lack of education, understands the Messiah and feels boldly to go to the city to proclaim the message. The woman's bold evangelism in the face of the disciples' disapproval demonstrates resilience that comes from an authentic encounter with divine love. And when any of us experience divine acceptance and genuine acceptance from God, human judgment loses all of its power and the community's disapproval fades away. Augustine notes that the disciples eventually learn from this encounter because later on they will cross ethnic and cultural boundaries in their own ministry. But this initial reaction shows that even their exposure to primarily Jesus firsthand didn't convince them. It took the woman and the outsider to do so. The disciples' presence also provides accountability for how we respond to other sexual healing journeys. Their silent judgment represents one option, maintaining moral superiority and religious propriety. But Jesus' example provides an alternative, that third alternative, engaging with curiosity, compassion, and recognition of everyone's need for grace. Modern research on religious trauma confirms that many people have been harmed by the disapproval of religious communities, and the disciples are representative of that group. What we would try to do is, of course, extend divine grace to all those as Jesus did. In conclusion, the disciples' response reveals how religious communities can inadvertently perpetuate sexual shame through silent judgment and misplaced priorities, but also demonstrates the possibility of growth when confronted with Jesus' radical inclusiveness and grace-centered approach to human sexuality and relationships.
So we have this tension between Jesus' radical acceptance and the disciples' religiously property. But the story does not end with just a woman transformation. She goes back to her community and becomes an evangelist. Is that vision of healing creating expanding circles of influence? is incredibly helpful. Now let's get the practical. What does this ancient story actually look like when applied to modern dating relationship? How can couples today experience this kind of transformation, Mr. Meg?
The Woman at the Well provides a complete roadmap for sexual healing that's both psychologically sound and theologically grounded. Her journey demonstrates specific steps that modern couples can take to experience a similar transformation in their own relationships. First, let's address the progression of disclosure in dating relationships. This would be, over time, more and more honesty with safety and commitment demonstrated as the relationship develops. It shows that sexual histories don't need to be shared immediately, but over time as intimacy grows. Practical guidelines might include discussing general attitudes towards sexuality early in dating, sharing specific experiences as emotional intimacy develops, and creating explicit arrangements and agreements about confidentiality and non-judgmental responses. The goal isn't detailed confessions, but honest acknowledgement of how past experiences also present capacity for intimacy. John Chrysostom's observation that the woman moves immediately from receiving grace to engaging in theological conversation provides insight for couples. Sexual healing isn't separate from spiritual growth. They happen together. And couples need spaces where their faith can develop and their sexual choices without falling into the problems of being both too legal or too licensed. This might share experiences and spiritual practices that acknowledge full humanity in all kinds of things, sexual healing and healthy intimacy, Bible study that addresses real relationship challenges rather than maintaining spiritual facades, and worship that celebrates both their brokenness and God's redemptive love. The woman's integration of spiritual and sexual identity challenges the compartmentalization so common in dating. Her encounter with Christ transforms her understanding of both worships and relationships simultaneously. Modern couples need to reject the false dichotomies that separate their spiritual and their sexual development. And what they can do is integrate into their faith along with their sexual boundaries and goals, praying together about physical intimacy, decisions, and viewing relationships as part of a spiritual formation rather than separate. It doesn't mean becoming everything spiritual. It means recognizing that God cares about their whole relationship, physical and spiritual. Jerome's emphasis on the woman's immediate evangelistic response suggests that healing couples naturally become resources for others. Sexual redemption creates credibility and compassion that can serve church communities struggling with those issues, and that service emerges organically from transformation rather than being forced or manufactured. Couples might find themselves naturally attracting friends who ask for relationship advice, being asked to mentor younger couples, or sensing calls to more formal ministry roles. The key is allowing their authentic healing to speak for itself rather than promoting themselves or their story. The early church fathers consistently emphasized that the woman's shame begins healing through divine encounter before human relationship. This suggests that individuals need personal spiritual resources to participate fully in intimate partnerships. When we expect partners to provide the acceptance and validation that only God can give, we create codependent rather than covenant relationships. Practical steps for developing a spiritual formation include prayer and Bible study that addresses sexual shame and identity, Christian counseling when needed, participation in recovery groups that integrate faith and psychology, and spiritual direction that helps integrate all aspects of life. What we need to connect is the spirit and in truth, providing couples getting over sexual shame or addiction. Authentic worship requires bringing our full reality, including your sexual struggles, before God without pretense or hiding. This means creating healing with a divine love and encounter. Couples could practice prayer together without wallowing in shame, worship that God's love is for them as sexual beings who are created for intimacy. The goal is authenticity rather than perfection. The woman's response to Jesus' revelation of her sexual history, moving towards deeper spiritual conversation rather than defensiveness or withdrawal, models emotional maturity that dating couples need to develop. This includes the capacity to acknowledge difficult truths without being overwhelmed. In conclusion, practical skills include learning to self-soothe during difficult conversations, developing vocabulary for discussing sexual experiences without shame or blame, and practicing non-defensive responses to partners' concerns or questions about sexual history.
Very well said, Mr. Meg. Very well said. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom to the world. And the encounter between Jesus and the Samaritan woman at the well is more than the story of conversation. It's a profound revelation of sexual theology of redemption. In breaking cultural taboos, speaking with a woman of questionable reputation and offering her living water, Jesus reframed desire, intimacy, and worth through the lens of divine grace rather than shame. Mr. Mink, would you like to plug in something?
I appreciate the opportunity. Write the book, grow the business. Connect with me on LinkedIn, G. Mick, the Dr. Digital Smith, PhD. Also pick up a couple volumes on Amazon, On Track 1500, in America, and also listen to the Dr. Digital Podcast.
Yes, people, let's about Mr. Mick, the Dr. Digital, and please do listen to our podcast, Mental Health 101. Mental Health 101 is created for our mental health awareness. Mr. Mike, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Until next time, stay safe.
For some people, see you soon.